efficient. And I found ways to do that. I mean, technology helps. So now I go home, have dinner with my kids, and then they go to bed, and then I go work.
Yeah.
And that's been helpful. But now being on my own and being essentially a virtual.
Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Conley, Judge Klopphockey, Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Go ahead and take a seat. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have a mixed calendar today with four of our case matters being presented by oral argument. For record purposes, counsel, I want to remind you that when you are ready to make your argument, that you indicate who you are and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. Each of you has 15 minutes for your argument. 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal to appellant counsel if you choose to use that. It looks like you're ready to go, so whenever you are so inclined, you may approach the podium and begin your presentation. And I'm sorry, I meant to have our marshal call the first case for hearing.
First matter on the calendar is A19-0481, Tyler Halva, appellant versus Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Counsel, court. My name is Jared Gorlitz, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Tyler Halva, who is also here in the gallery. By the time this court decides this appeal, Mr. Halva has been waiting 4 years for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to comply with the law. This began with a records request and an administrative hearing through the Office of Administrative Hearings due to the state of Minnesota violating the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. And then after that was completed, Mr. Halva commenced a district court action. That district court action has been dismissed, which is why we're here today. Mr. Halva seeks to have the district court reversed for the dismissal of his claims under count 3 and 4 of his complaint, which count 3 is to compel compliance with the Official Records Act, and count 4 is seeking damages under both the Official Records Act and the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. There are 3 issues before this court on appeal. The first issue is, can Mr. Halva seek compliance with the Official Records Act can Mr. Halva seek compliance through the administrative process and then seek damages in district court? Issue 2 is, can Mr. Halva seek damages from Minnesota State for violating the Official Records Act through the bid letting process? And issue 3 is, can Mr. Halva seek compliance with the Official Records Act to seek that they compel them to actually provide an official record for why his bid was ultimately rejected? The first issue, I think, is a relatively straightforward one, and that is predominantly because there really isn't a dispute from Minnesota State. We both essentially acknowledge the plain language of the statute. And the statute is the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, Statute 13.03 and 13.085. The court, the district court, said that Mr. Halva cannot seek compliance to the administrative process and then come back to district court and seek damages. That violates the plain language of the statute. I said it in my brief, and it's relatively clear. If you read Minnesota Statute 13.08 subdivision 4, the language in essence says that you can seek compliance, and then in addition to essentially seeking compliance, you can seek damages under subdivisions.
Did you read respondents' briefs to concede that point?
I did. I mean, I would say they didn't flat out concede it. I'm expecting they'll concede it today, but I read it to be, well, I'm not going to disagree with it, but the district court said that you can't do this. So I read their brief to essentially be conceding it. I don't think you can dispute the plain language of the statute, and frankly, the district court got it wrong. You can seek compliance through the administrative process and then seek damages. In fact, the plain language of Minnesota Statute 13.085 says just that.
Are you talking about damages now? What damages have you alleged?
The complaint says that Mr. Halva has been damaged. Now, I know the response from the Minnesota State has been that, well, you didn't properly plead damages, so you know the district court should have dismissed your case along those lines. However, they did not file a notice of related appeal. So that issue is not before this court, and had it been before this court, we would have properly addressed it. We do believe we have damages. The district court did not address that issue in dismissing our complaint, and there was no notice of related appeal, so that issue isn't before us. The second issue before this court is whether Mr. Helva can seek damages under the Officials Records Act because through essentially the bid letting process.
Let's go back to the damages. There may not have been an order that was filed, but aren't we limited to looking at the relief that was granted under 1202? I mean, don't we have to look at the pleadings and see what you've alleged?
I would say yes. I mean, the motion was that, well, there's two motions here. So the first motion would have been that under the pleadings, whether we pled a valid claim against Minnesota State. And one of the arguments by the state at that time was that we hadn't properly alleged damages. And we responded to that. And we said, yes, we've been damaged. We believe we've been damaged in a number of different ways. At a minimum, postage. At a minimum, there's a filing fee through the administrative process where you only get, you get basically your filing fee back except for $50. And there's other damages. The fact of the matter is we believe we've been damaged. I'm not conceding, though, that that issue is properly before the court, because what's properly before the court is our notice of appeal related to the dismissal by the district court. And the dismissal by the district court relative to that issue was that you cannot bring a claim for damages after you've gone through administrative process. The court never dealt with the issue of whether we had properly alleged damages or not, and in essence, a rejection of their issue. And we've cited in our brief, or our reply, as to why Minnesota State would have been required to file a notice of related appeal if it wanted to bring that issue before this court. It did not, and there's a number of cases that support that position. In our reply, we cite the City of Ramsey versus Holmberg, and in that case, it says, if a party fails to file a notice of related appeal pursuant to Minnesota Rule of Appellate Procedure 106, the issue is not preserved for appeal, and a reviewing court cannot address it. Here, and if you look at that case, it even goes into that it says, even if the judgment below is ultimately in its favor, a party must file a notice of related appeal to challenge the district court's ruling on a particular issue. So here, if Minnesota State wanted to deal with the issue of damages on this appeal, it would have had to file a notice of related appeal in response to our appeal regarding the issue of damages. Again, we don't believe it's properly before this court, and if it was, we would have addressed it and said we have alleged damages, and we have been damaged, as already indicated to the court. Secondarily, our second issue is that our claim was dismissed, that we are not allowed to seek damages under the Official Records Act through the bid letting process. And the case law is clear. The Minnesota Supreme Court has indicated that if you're an unsuccessful bidder, you may sue the entity awarding the public contract. And that's in the Carl Bolander and Sons case. And I don't think that's disputed law. It's also undisputed law that the Minnesota Supreme Court...
But doesn't those bid statutes... You know, if you want to challenge a bid, don't you do it under the, you know, bid challenging statute as opposed to the Official Records Act?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I don't know what you're referring to by those statutes. But what we did cite in our brief is there is an example in the. The New Mesh Companies versus the Independent School District case, it's the 509 Northwest 2D579 case, and that's a case where, through the bid letting process, the Minnesota Prevailing Wage Act statute was violated, and they then sought to a claim against the Independent School District for violation of the bid letting process for rejecting their bid because of a violation of the Prevailing Wage Act. So that was a statute that was violated through the bid letting process, and that's the law. If you violate a statute through the bid letting process, there's a valid claim that somebody can make against the...
The case you're referring to under that Wage Prevailing Act, does that act specifically provide for a private cause of action?
No, it does not. So the Minnesota Prevailing Wage Act does not provide for a private cause of action, but because it was violated through the bid letting process, they had a valid claim through the bid letting process against the state agency that awarded the contract, the Independent School District. And they cite in that case the Nielsen versus City of St. Paul decision by the Minnesota Supreme Court, which says that essentially if you are, that a proper challenge for the failure to comply with the bid letting process is when you fail to comply with all applicable statutes. Here, an applicable statute would be the Official Records Act. You're supposed to make a record of your decision regarding this bid. They failed to do that. That's a statute. It applies to the bid letting process. And we believe we've made a valid claim under the Official Records Act for damages. The third issue is kind of a unique one, given the way it was argued and pled and then decided by the court, and that is whether Mr. Helva's claim for compliance under the Officials Record Act should have been dismissed. The district court basically said there's no private cause of action to compel clients, there is no private cause of action whatsoever under the Official Records Act, so your claim to compel compliance should be dismissed. We believe the district court morphed the state's argument into making that conclusion. The state, if you look at their brief, and I would encourage the court to do so, it's document 37 in the document list, and it's their memorandum in support of their motion for judgment on the pleadings. The state said, essentially in argument number one, there's no claim for damages, no private cause of action for damages under the Official Records Act. That was their argument with respect to damages. Then when the state argued with respect to compliance, its secondary argument was, well, their argument for compliance also fails because it essentially requests an absurd result. And the legislature did not create statutes that lead to an absurd result. The district court blushes over that and just says there's no private cause of action for anything, either damages or to compel clients. By way of reference, we simply show that, you know, you can compel compliance in this state. There is a private cause of action to do that. It's generally through a writ of mandamus, but the fact of the matter is we can bring a claim to compel compliance. It's not an absurd result for them to actually have to comply with the statute, and we've indicated that in our brief. And so that claim should also be reversed and remanded back to district.
You're limited to going by writ of mandamus.
I'm not, because that was not the arguments that were made. The argument that was made by the state was you can't compel compliance because it's an absurd result. We say, no, it's not an absurd result. And, oh, by the way, and then the district court said, well, you can't bring it because it's a private cause of action. Well, that wasn't the argument that was made. If the argument would have been made that, well, you can't bring a private cause of action, maybe we would have said, yeah, you can. Here, look at the writ of mandamus statute. You can bring a private cause of action. My point kind of is the way it was argued in the district court and the way it was decided is quite different, and that's why we never brought the argument that, you know, it's similar to a writ of mandamus where we were arguing a writ of mandamus. The point is we can bring an action to compel compliance. The state's argument fails that it leads to absurd result. They're pure conclusions. We've argued that in our brief. To simply make a record of their decision, I don't think is absurd, and they could certainly do that. I've argued it's just simply a pencil and a piece of paper to make a record. It's not that hard to do, and they could certainly do that. I see my time's running out if I want to have any rebuttal, so I'll save the rest of my arguments for rebuttal.
Thank you. Can you respond?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Ian Welsh, Assistant Attorney General. This morning, I'm representing Minnesota State Colleges and Universities in this matter. And with me here this morning, I have Mary Al Balber, who is Associate General Counsel at Minnesota State. Your Honor, several years ago, appellant Tyler Helva submitted an unsuccessful proposal for a state contract.
Before you get into all of the facts surrounding this instance, there was a question about what you're conceding and what you're not. So let's establish that first so we know where you're going.
Sure, Your Honor. Your Honor, the respondent concedes that a party may bring an action for damages after seeking to compel compliance before OAH. So opposing counsel was correct in his assertion there.
But presumably you're saying simply that
I want damages is not sufficiently clear. You've got to articulate, well, what kind? And that's why it fails under Rule 12?
That's correct, Judge Connolly. Even under the Walsh standard, the court held.
So if he had said, and I want damages for postage and filing fees and lost wages and, you know, whatever profit I would have made. If he had said that, would that have been sufficient then, Mr. Walsh? Mr. Welch, excuse me.
Yes, and that's the first I've heard of the $50 in postage. I would hope that we're not here today over $50.
I'm sure we're not.
Yeah.
But what about sort of, you know, notice pleading? I mean,
sure.
He said damages. What case says you've got to specifically enumerate, you know, the laundry list of what those damages are?
Sure, Judge Connolly. Even under the Walsh standard, that court reaffirmed that that legal conclusions aren't binding on a court when determining whether a claim survives a Rule 12 motion. I believe the Walsh court labeled that a common sense proposition.
There wasn't a damage issue there?
I'm sorry?
It wasn't involving damages there?
The Walsh case, I believe, did involve damages, yes.
Interesting. The Walsh case stands for the proposition that you have to be explicit in the type of damages that you're alleging.
That's
to
correct.
Survive a Rule 12.
That's correct, Your Honor. So several years ago, Appellant Halva submitted an unsuccessful proposal for a Minnesota State contract. Respondent Minnesota State provided to him, upon his request, the name of the winning bidder, the scorecards for the other vendors who submitted proposals, and the reason why his proposal was disqualified. None of this context appellant disputes. Having said that, I'd like to accomplish just three objectives this morning. The first is to clarify the issues on appeal, which we've started to do already. The second is establish that this court should affirm the lower court's holding. And the third is, of course, to continue to answer any questions that you might have for me.
Just before you go further, I'm looking the way you've cited Walsh in your brief that isn't consistent with what you're citing it for now.
Your Honor, to the extent there's any inconsistency, what I'm arguing here today is that the appellant needs to assert facts alleging that he suffered damages in his complaint in order to survive a Rule 12 motion.
And you're saying the Walsh case specifically involved the question of whether you could have a general statement in a notice pleading state that I have damages.
Well, so with the Walsh case did was reject the idea that there's the federal plausibility standard and reaffirm that Minnesota is a notice pleading state. But it left intact the standard that a plaintiff must assert facts and not legal conclusions, that legal conclusions aren't binding on a court when determining whether or not a claim survives a Rule 12 motion.
And so following up on that, then, it's your argument that he's got to explain the facts that led him to incur damages, like, you know, whatever it is, I didn't get this job, therefore I was expecting, you know, a margin of profits, blah blah blah. So that's what you believe Walsh stands for.
Yes, Your Honor. That
do we have to get to, you know, and apart from whether damages have been sufficiently pled or not, if we agree with you that the magic language, the ORA, is the Official Records Act? I can't even remember what it says.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If we believe that that does not provide for a private cause of action, okay, does that wipe out everything of the appeal?
At issue this morning is appellant's claim that there's a private cause of action to compel compliance. So if the court rules that there's no private, that the ORI doesn't create private causes of action, that does wipe out that issue entirely.
So who cares if it doesn't allow a private cause of action, who cares whether he pled damages with specificity or not?
His damages claim, Your Honor, is if you read the complaint, even the most liberal read of the complaint, his damages claim is under the MGDPA and not the ORA.
Okay.
The district court initially ruled that, or analyzed that particular claim, I believe it's 4, as including a claim under the ORA, and it simply doesn't. It later conceded in its order on...
But it doesn't matter under ORA if there's not a private cause of action. I mean, that's what you're asserting, right? If there's no private cause of action, that's it. We don't even care about damages.
Yes, under the ORA.
Under the ORA. And then we have the district court action, and as it relates to the district court action, which also can go on because you've conceded that today, the fact that a Rule 1202 motion to dismiss didn't have damages asserted allows us to affirm the district court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But appellant argues that you heard him, that you're not that issue is not properly before this court because you didn't file a notice of review.
Your Honor, appeal. The court at any time can address an issue in the interest of justice, provided that in addressing the issue, it wouldn't work an unfair surprise on an opposing party. Here, the respondents briefed this up several times, including in its briefs that were submitted to the Court of Appeals. This wouldn't work prejudice or unfair surprise on the appellant to address this issue at this stage.
Sometimes I...
Do you cite for that proposition?
The cite, Your Honor, is... One moment. Northwest 2nd, 455, Pin site 457. That's a Minnesota Supreme Court case, 1989.
The name of the case again is?
Your Honor, for whatever reason, I omitted the name of the case. I just wrote down the citation.
Is it in your brief?
No, it's not, because this was raised for the first time in appellant's briefing on reply, I believe.
Well, you know, I used to think that, what you just said, but then at least Justice Hudson wrote a concurring opinion in the Heilman case suggesting that if we do affirm on other grounds without allowing the parties an opportunity to brief it, that that's not kosher. Now, that's only her opinion, and it was a concurrence, but it does give some of us pause now as to what we're supposed to be doing. So, but your position is, even if you didn't file a notice of related appeal, the claim fails as a matter of law under Rule 12 because it's not, period.
That's correct, Your Honor. And for what it's worth, I shepherdized this particular case. It remains good law. And also, the district court acknowledged, at least, that that Minnesota State brought forth that particular argument, although I do concede that it was not fully addressed in his order. We've addressed essentially the majority of the topics I'd like to discuss with you this morning. Perhaps if I could walk through some of the questions that were asked moments ago. Judge Connolly, you'd asked whether or not action to challenge a request for proposal should be brought under whichever statute governs the request for proposals, and that's correct.
What statute is that?
MnSTAT. It's Chapter 16C, and specifically 16C 281 creates original jurisdiction over actions to challenge RFPs.
Well, is that exclusive?
Exclusive jurisdiction over the action? So, Judge Klapacki, so what you're asking is whether or not appellant should be permitted to circumvent private cause of action law by claiming, for example, that ORA claim is actually a bid protest claim? The answer I would argue is no, that it shouldn't be permitted.
Because?
Well, because this is long-standing, well-established law that in order to create a private cause of action, the statute needs to either explicitly or impliedly create one.
trigger, he could have proceeded by mandamus?
No, Your Honor, for several reasons. First, original jurisdiction over mandamus actions is in district court. That's section 586.11. And secondly, that was never presented to the district court, and at the very least, the respondent should be permitted to provide an answer to such a writ. Judge Connolly, you had asked about the Newmet case that's cited in appellant's brief. In that case, the question is whether or not the Prevailing Wage Act applied to the contract at issue, not whether or not the Prevailing Wage Act, by not following the Prevailing Wage Act, that the bid process was somehow violated. It was just really a question of whether or not the Prevailing Wage Act applied to the contract that's at issue in the case. Your Honors, if you have no further questions.
It appears not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go back to you, Mr. Erling, for the rebuttal.
Thank you again, Jira Gorlitz, here on behalf of the appellate Tyler.
I'm sorry, did I have the wrong last name?
What was that?
What was your last name, sir?
Gorlitz.
Oh, Gorlitz. I'm sorry. I mispronounced it. I'm sorry.
Didn't even notice. I think it's important first to deal with this issue of whether damages has been properly brought before this court as an issue. And I don't understand how you can cite case law that says you have to raise an issue on a related appeal, but yet I guess if the court wants to do whatever it wants, I guess it can. I mean, that's essentially the argument. The citation counsel just cited for the state fee.
Well, I would hope that's not the argument, because I certainly wouldn't agree with that. And I think Judge Klapacki and Judge Werke would. I
mean, well, the argument was in the interest of justice, right? And I think in the interest of justice, a court can deal with an issue in some instances. But I'm not aware what they were. There's been no argument by the respondent as to what standard applies and when it applies and how it applies to this case. They know that what the district court held, which was it didn't deal with the issue of damages. They didn't file a notice of related appeal to bring it before this court. And they, in their respondent's brief, dealt with the issue for the first time. And we dealt with it in our reply brief. If we had known damages was an issue, we would have properly briefed it and properly cited to the record where damages were discussed and those types of things. But it wasn't brought before this court on a notice of related appeal. And if you don't bring it before this court on a notice of related appeal, it should not be before this court. And clearly the citation made by Mr. Welsh of the State v. Sorensen case about the court can do it on the interest of justice, I just looked at the case. I don't see anything in that case. The Westlaw head notes don't say anything about the Court of Appeals or the Minnesota Supreme Court taking up issues if it believes it is in the interest of justice. And I asked the court to see the citations in our reply brief that no, that issue is not before this court unless you file a notice of related appeal. Let's just talk briefly about notice pleading. I think the standard should be that if you say, I've been damaged, certainly it's conclusive, but for some reason, notice pleading has morphed into this, oh, the federal court says you need plausibility, so now you better have all these facts in your state court pleading. I'm sure when the court practiced law, you basically said, breach of contract and I've been damaged, or negligence and I've been damaged, or I seek damages in an amount, exceeding $50,000 to be terminated at trial. Those are just normal pleading standards. As far as what the Walsh court held, it doesn't deal with pleading damages. It deals with whether this plausibility standard from the federal court should now be the standard in state court, and the Minnesota Supreme Court and Welsh said no. It doesn't deal with damages. So that case does not help the state in this issue as well. And we believe we've properly pled damages. We believe we properly argued to the district court that there have been damages.
When you
here.
Say you properly pled damages, so you're saying when we go through your pleadings with a fine-tooth comb, because we're reviewing this as a 1202 dismissal, that we'll find adequate notice of damages?
Yes.
That's essentially what
it's my position that when you say, I've been damaged, that should be sufficient pleading for damages. And It was further bolstered by the arguments at court, both through the pleadings as well as at oral argument. And I don't have those citations for you because it was not, I don't think it's an issue on appeal. With respect.
Preserved to be an issue on appeal.
Correct. It is not an issue preserved. So even if the court wants to go through the pleadings and look at that, I don't think it
well,
should
think
even be looking
to.
At it.
The dismissal was under 1202. I mean, we have, our review is what the district court did.
I think your review is what the district court did in the context of the issues appealed. And the issues, so if the district court, also dismissed, for example, counts 1 and 2.
Correct.
Right? And that issue is not before this court. So by position, damages aren't before this court. The only issues that this court should be looking at and the arguments it should be addressing are those that are brought before this court on appeal. And I mean, I don't believe that the district court, in the interest of justice, could say, well, I'm going to revive counts 1 and 2 because I think those are were improperly dismissed. And if they had filed a notice relative appeal and brought it before the court, then I would agree that that issue is now in play and has been preserved.
Mr. Gerlitz, I did have one final question. So let's say for the sake of argument, I, speaking for myself only, not the panel, don't believe that the Official Records Act creates a private cause of action.
Yes.
And let's say again, speaking for myself and not the panel, I believe you did, under Rule 12 specifically, by saying the magic word damages, you know, that's enough. Okay. Under those frameworks, are you still, so it's my understanding then what's left is whether you get any damages under the Minnesota Government Data Privacy Act?
Correct.
Okay.
So.
But can you get those damages under that act for records they don't have?
Different issues. I think we're entitled to a claim for damages. Whatever that may be, that's what has been pled. Under the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, my client has sustained an injury in fact, some of them we talked about, and so he's entitled to those damages. He's already compelled compliance through administrative process, but through the court process, he can get damages. Separately, we've argued, because they violated the Official Records Act through the bid letting process, we have a claim for damages there as well. So even if you got rid of the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act claim, we still have a claim under the official through the bid letting process for damages for a violation of the Official Records Act. Our third argument is, separate from damages, we have a right to compel compliance through the Official Records Act. They didn't make an official record. The statute says they are required to do so, and we should be able to compel compliance. They did not argue that you can't bring a private cause of action to compel compliance, which is why we did not argue you can through a writ of mandamus. What they argued is that it was absurd, and we say, no, it's not absurd to compel compliance. Does that answer your question? There's kind of three issues.
Your time has expired, but if Judge Connolly has an additional question, I'd please proceed and answer.
You know, I get the answer to the last two. I don't know if I agree with you, but I get your answer.
Yep.
What I'm still trying to find out is, where under the Minnesota Government Data Privacy or Practices Act are you allowed to get the damages you're now saying you're entitled to, apart from what you got at the administrative hearing?
Statute 13.08, subdivisions 1, 2, and 3 basically say you can go to district court and seek damages. The venue's in the county where you reside. Count 4 then says you can also, if you so choose, go do it administratively and compel compliance.
But I'm assuming it doesn't specifically say the it says damages, but it doesn't enumerate the damages that you now think you want.
It says subdivision 1, action for damages.
Okay. All right.
And I'm sure you can read it just as I could, but.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you very much, Judge Werke.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The matters are deemed submitted, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.
Thank you, Your Honor.